is the news.
This hour's top stories. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the Islamic Republic is not in a rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. U.S. President Donald Trump effectively concedes election defeat amid calls for his impeachment and a wave of resignations following the storming of Congress by his supporters. Also ahead this hour, the World Health Organization's says the fast spread of a more contagious variant of the novel coronavirus across Europe is alarming. Welcome to the program. Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country is not in a rush for the U.S. to return to the 2015 nuclear deal. Ayatollah Khamenei said Iran's logical demand is the removal of the sanctions. He called them a crime and treason against the Iranian people, as well as a sign of baseless antagonism against them. Ayatollah Khamenei made the comments in a televised address to the nation. He voiced support for the authorities' decision to roll back Iran's commitments in response to non-compliance by other signatories of the nuclear deal. The leader also spoke about Iran's regional presence and said it has helped improve security there. He added the interests of the U.S. and its allies are rooted in regional instability. Let's discuss this with Mr. Samehdi Torabi. He is the director of Resalat Strategic Studies Institute, who joins us via Skype out of the holy city of Rome. Samehdi Torabi, like always, which part of the leader's speech interested you more? Try to delineate a little bit on that speech.
Good morning. You know, I think this was a historic speech. This was a speech. It wasn't like the other speeches. Mm. He really mentioned the most important key points domestically, regionally, globally. And he said it in a tone, and he said it in a way that basically puts an end to a lot of these discussions. If you think about some of the discussions that are happening domestically, or some of the issues that are being discussed in the Western media or in media outside of Iran in terms of some of the issues of Iran, he really, you know, mentioned the main points, and he said it in a way that clarified and puts to rest a lot of the discussions. I think one of the things that was interesting for me is that the way he talked about America being an idol, and that idol being a false god, being something that people worship. What do you do with idols? You worship them based on, you know, nothing related to rational or anything that's real, which is the difference between real religions and fake religions and cults. And so he talked about this idol of America, you know, falling apart. And it's interesting. He also added, he said, it's wondrous, it's strange how some people still cling to this for hope or use America as their example. You know, we have people in Iran who still do that, and we have people other places who still do that. And he referred, of course, to the all of it, to Corona, to the elections, to, you know, what happened in the last couple of days in the U.S. So this, I think, was very important. For a lot of people to hear, both in Iran and outside of Iran. The other thing that he talked about, which is very important, and you also mentioned it in your comments, which is that all of U.S. policy in the region is based on destabilization. It's not simply that the U.S. wants the region to be unstable. It actively destabilizes the region. And it does it by supporting dictators on a political level. It does it by supporting oligarchic economic systems where money and wealth is in the hands of the few and the people have no role in the economy. And it supports it most importantly, and this starts with the British and the Americans as the inheritor of the British Empire. It does so by creating unviable states that cannot survive on their own and are completely dependent on foreign powers, in this case the Americans and before them the British. So you, if you look at the map of West Asia, you see little countries that have no independent capability of surviving, and so they become vassals of the U.S., and you see all the things that happen. And unfortunately, we spend time in the media, in academia, speaking about these countries, as he said, as the leader himself said, I'm not going to mention names. So I'm not going to mention names either now, maybe. But we spend time discussing these countries and the acts of the leaders of these countries as if they're really countries. They're not real countries.
Mm.
They are sovereign and territorial mendacities that have been given a flag by the retreating British and by the Americans, that have been given legal status in the international system, but they have no peoples. They are basically family-run dictatorships that passes from brother to brother, or from brother from father to son, or to uncle to nephew.
This is
the reality of it, and we talk about them as though they're real things. Compared to that, you have a real country like Iran with a real history, with real people, with a real system of governance that's based on a revolution. And of course, the occasion of the leader's speech was the 19th of Dey, which was the uprising in Qom, here in the city of Qom, where I am today, which was the spark that began the revolution in Iran. And what was the revolution in Iran? It was the Iranian people deciding that they're going to overthrow an absolute monarchy that was completely dependent, corrupt. These are all the things that he mentioned in the speech. For those who saw it, it's repetitive, but for those who didn't see it, they have to know that what existed in Iran was a completely corrupt, dependent, oligarchic dictatorship in the hands of one person who knows how he became. He became the king, he became the ruler of this ancient land because his father was the king. And so what happened in Iran and what happened in Qom, and then which led to the revolution, was that the Iranian people decided they're going to have a system of governance in which they themselves make the main decisions. They themselves get to vote for the legislative branch, they get to vote for the executive branch, and all of this within the religion that is their religion, which is Islam. So, you know, there's this false narrative that somehow Islam is against, you know, democracy, or Islam is against people having a popular government. That's absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. What it is we have a system in which the limits of what humans can do is set by Sharia. And Sharia in Shia Islam is determined by living mujtahids. These are technical terms, but people should know them. It's very important. What we have in Shia Islam is a system in which the laws are reviewed by living scholars. So that's why you see, for example, he mentioned some of the technologies that Iran has made advancements in, including nanotechnology and cellular stem cells, which Iran is a global leader in cellular stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to the fact that our scholars can determine that these things are not against Sharia or not against divine law, which is the goal is to live according to divine law. And so they are able to enter into technologies, and we see Iran in the last 40 years becoming a global leader in many technologies, because we don't have that kind of irrational superstitious way of looking at religion. It's a rational religion, you know, and it allows us to advance. And what has happened in Iran in the last 40 years is something that's remarkable in history. We have never seen a case in the world where you had a country going from what it was 40, 50 years ago to what it is today. He also talked about, you know, media control, which I think is a very important point.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about that a big part of what intelligence and security services do in the world is control how history, how events, how the media reports on events. And they try to distort it, spin it in a way that is to their advantage. And we need to look no further than what is happening in the U.S. You have, big tech, Twitter, Facebook, all these big, huge monopolies. And by the way, this is not some sort of when I say they're monopolies, this was determined by a congressional committee when they did research and they wanted to investigate whether these big tech companies, all those names that I mentioned and others, whether they fit the definition of a monopoly, which is against the law in the U.S., they concluded that they do.
Mm.
And so what we have is, you have, of course, for Press TV and for Iranians, you know, whenever somebody was posting something, for example, about Haj Qasem, General Soleimani, of course, we all got banned and we all got kicked out, or we got, you know, temporarily, you know, got removed, whatever post it was. It could have been a very innocent, simple thing.
Right.
So this is nothing new for Iranians. But it's interesting to see that they're doing it to their own president. They're doing it to people, you know, I mean, let's not get very excited about some of the things we hear in Western media. 70 million people plus voted for Trump. So this is a significant portion of the American population.
Mm-hmm.
Let's assume, you know, half of them are diehard Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
That's still 35, 40 million people. And you see what's happening in the U.S. is they're being completely erased off the media. They don't allow them to talk in the mainstream network media. They're being erased off the big tech social media platforms. And the whole narrative is being spun in a way that's to the advantage of the ruling elites and the ruling oligarchy. So this is something very important that he talked about.
Of course.
And the same with history. There were other things.
Matthew, before you continue, I'm pretty sure that you and I could go on and, you know, do this as long as you like. But unfortunately, I have prepared some other news stories for people this hour. If you allow me, we'll talk about this. We'll pick this up or some other issues perhaps at some other time. For now, let me just thank you for the time you gave me and Mehdi. Assam Mehdi Torabi, the director with Resolat Strategic Studies Institute at the City of Qom. It's always a pleasure. You know that, Mehdi. Thank you. The U.S. president has announced that he is now focusing on a peaceful transition of power a day after Congress certified Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election.
I continue to strongly believe that we must reform our election laws to verify the identity and eligibility of all voters and to ensure faith and confidence in all future elections. Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power. This moment calls for healing and reconciliation.
Donald Trump also condemned Wednesday's attack on the U.S. Capitol, saying rioters had defiled the seat of American democracy. He added that demonstrators who infiltrated Congress do not represent the country, and those who broke the law will pay. The statement is viewed as a historic reversal for Trump, who had himself called the rally and kept insisting that he lost the race due to widespread fraud. The new U.S. administration is due to take charge on January the 20th. Mark Weber is the director of the U.S.-based Institute for Historical Review. He joined us earlier and explained why Trump did a U-turn and recognized the outcome of the November presidential vote.
The reality is now so obvious to even Donald Trump that the new administration will be coming into office in 13 days. Even Donald Trump's accepting that. The main motive for Donald Trump throughout his career and his lifetime has been that he doesn't want to be doesn't want to appear to be a loser. But the stunning, amazing events of yesterday and today are, I think, an entirely fitting conclusion of a four-year calamitous, contentious administration by this man that now most of the world and millions of Americans are looking forward to seeing behind us in 13 days. All his advisors, everyone, his own vice president, members of his administration, I'm sure his family, his inner circle, are all telling him that he has to wake up and just accept the obvious reality. The law has been followed, the results are in, all the efforts by the Trump administration to overturn the election results have failed. He has to accept this reality. To do anything else would just be add tragedy to the already farcical situation that everybody is seeing.
A U.S. Capitol police officer has died of injuries he sustained during the storming of Congress by supporters of President Donald Trump. The officer, identified as Brian Sicknick, is the fifth person to die since Wednesday. The riot saw swarms of pro-Trump protesters surge into the U.S. Congress compound and force the evacuation of lawmakers. The violence broke out as Congress was meeting to certify Joe Biden's victory in the November presidential election. Four other people died as the protesters occupied the Capitol. Police in Washington, D.C. said more than 50 officers were injured during the unrest. Some seriously. Activists have criticized the United States law enforcement for applying what they see as racist double standards towards black and white protesters.
When black people protest for our lives, we are all too often met by National Guard troops or police equipped with assault rifles, shields, tear gas, and battle helmets. When white people attempt a coup, they are met by an underwhelming number of law enforcement personnel who act powerless to intervene, going so far as to pose for selfies with terrorists.
The Black Lives Matter movement made the criticism after President Trump's supporters breached Capitol Hill on Wednesday. Some of them entered the building as lawmakers were at a meeting to certify President-elect Joe Biden. He has also condemned police's discriminatory measures, calling them unacceptable. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris has joined the chorus of criticism, too. She said the U.S. justice system does not equally apply to white and black people and called for reforming it. Political analyst Alexander Azadgan says the Wednesday attack on the U.S. Congress by pro-Trump protesters received preferential treatment by police.
There was a security breach. Perhaps some of the people there, security guards, were biased toward these people. The treatment of so-called white protesters is completely different than what we do with black protesters. Following our news here yesterday, around exactly 24 hours ago, only 13 people got arrested. Can you imagine if there were Black Lives Matter protesters or social justice warriors, protesters in these, that who, if they committed what these insurrectionists committed, they would have been shot, they would have been gassed, and it would have taken right in front of the camera, and the law, so-called law enforcement officers would have gotten away with it.
The United States marks its deadliest day of the COVID-19 pandemic with nearly 4,000 fatalities. According to data from Johns Hopkins University, the record number of deaths has brought the total toll to nearly 365,000. The U.S. also recorded more than 265,000 new coronavirus infections. The overall number of people infected with the virus has topped 21.5 million. The United States is the world's worst hit country by the pandemic in terms of infections and fatalities. COVID-19 deaths in Brazil have surpassed the grim milestone of 200,000, the second highest in the world, as the South American nation prepares to begin its vaccination program. The Brazilian Health Ministry also reported a record number of nearly 88,000 new cases. This takes the total confirmed cases of the infection in the country to nearly 8 million. The latest figures come following the health ministry's announcement that the country is ready to begin vaccinating its population against COVID-19 this month. The World Health Organization says Europe needs to do more to deal with an alarming situation brought by a new COVID variant. The WHO's European branch has called on everyone to follow rules on social distancing, mask wearing, and staying at home. Otherwise, the organization warned there will be an increased impact on the already stressed health systems. The WHO says the new coronavirus variant has already been detected in 22 European countries. Many states there have begun vaccination programs and imposed strict lockdown measures to battle COVID. A new strain has surfaced in the UK and is more transmissible. Because of that, infections have increased rapidly in Europe, already a hit-hard region by the pandemic.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible?
The نگاه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد،
recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, which was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We start from where we left you last week, and here is Ayah 26 of Surah Jathiyah.
قل الله يحييكم ثم يميتكم ثم يجمعكم إلى يوم القيامة لا ريب فيه ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون.
Say, O Prophet, it is Allah who gives you life, then He makes you die. Then He will gather you on the day of resurrection in which there is no doubt, but most people do not know. If you remember, in our last Friday's episode of this series, while explaining the previous ayahs of this surah, we said that blind pursuit of materialistic life with immersion in sins deprives a person of faith in God and thereby denial of the hereafter. This means there is no logical argument for the disbeliever's refusal to believe in resurrection, and it is the height of absurdity for them to demand that their dead are immediately brought back to life. The ayah that we recited to you now commands the prophet to explain to the disbelievers that the Almighty Creator brought you into existence and will make you die. Then, even though your corpses have decayed, become rotten bones and powdered into dust, He will raise you to life in your original shape and size on the day of resurrection, of which there is no doubt. It is strange that you seem to be ignorant of these undeniable facts of the system of creation, which follows an order through the will of the all-wise Creator. In other words, the evidence of divine omnipotence, wisdom, and justice is so clear that there is no room for any doubt or denial regarding resurrection. In other words, if you contemplate and properly use your God-given intellect, you will be able to recognize the order, harmony, and purpose of creation and become capable of perceiving the qualities of life, death, resurrection, and judgment. To be more precise, this worldly death is a preamble to everlasting life, since the purpose of the end of mundane life is prelude to immortality for all human beings. With the believers enjoying the perpetual bliss of paradise, and the disbelievers, the ceaseless torment of the fires of hell. Otherwise, the creation of the world would seem to be vain. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, life itself is the reason for certainty of the next life or resurrection for the day of judgment. And number two, disbelief is the result of the failure of a person to use the gift of intellect to properly contemplate on the manifest signs of God in the world of creation as well as in one's own self. Now let us listen to ayah 27 of the same surah.
وَلِلَّهِ مُلْكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَيَوْمَ تَقُومُ السَّاعَةُ يَوْمَئِذٍ يَخْسَرُ الْمُبْطِلُونَ.
To Allah belongs the kingdom of the heavens and the earth. And when the Hur sets in, the falsifiers will be losers in that day. This ayah tells the deniers of the day of resurrection and judgment to ponder on the power of the Almighty Creator in the heavens and the earth in order to understand that He can revive them, since all existence is in His power. It warns mankind against denying truth and following falsehood so that they would not be the ultimate losers on the arrival of the day of resurrection. This means worldly losses are trivial, but the losses to be incurred on the day of resurrection shall be catastrophic. In other words, on the day of resurrection, the disbelievers and evildoers shall be the permanent losers, since they had spent their life in vanity and ignorance despite the ample opportunities provided to them by the all-merciful Lord to repent and reform. In other words, the mortal world of the transient world resembles a marketplace where people are supposed to accrue the gains of the hereafter, which are spiritual and necessary for everlasting life that follows. Failure to accrue gains despite the availability of the capital of life may be likened to a bankrupt merchant having lost his capital without accruing any gain from worldly life. There will be nothing in store for such persons except rue and regret on the day of resurrection. From this ayah, we learn the following points. Number one, the Almighty Creator is capable of recreating in their original form all things that have decayed and perished, including human beings. Number two, by contemplating on the wonders of the world of creation, one can discover the absolute truth about God and His blessings to all. And number three, resurrection is necessary for the final judgment to determine the purpose, the creation, by rewarding the righteous and punishing the evildoers. Now let us listen to ayahs 28 and 29 of Surah Jasiyah.
وَتَرَى كُلَّ أُمَّةٍ جَاثِيَةٍ كُلُّ أُمَّةٍ تُدْعَى إِلَى كِتَابِهَا الْيَوْمَ تُجْزَوْنَ مَا كُنْتُمْ تَعْمَلُونَ هَذَا كِتَابُنَا يَنْطِقُ عَلَيْكُمْ بِالْحَقِّ إنا كنا نستنسخ ما كنتم تعملون.
And you will see every nation fallen on its knees. Every nation will be summoned to its book of record of deeds. Today you will be requited for what you used to do. This is our book, which speaks truly against you. Indeed, we used to record what you used to do. On the day of resurrection, everyone shall kneel down in fear and anxiety, since the system of creation is kept in order and harmony, and the records of human deeds are based on manifest evidence. When the record of deeds is opened, everyone will be called to account on the basis of their deeds, and everyone shall be recompensed according to their deeds. It may also mean that the nations of the past will be judged by the heavenly scriptures revealed to their respective prophets and whether or not they acted upon its instructions. The word Jathia mentioned in Ayah 28 means kneeling down at the time of fear, awe, anxiety, humility, and submission. Since the record of deeds of each and every one will be open for the final judgment. As specified by Ayah 29, the book mentioned here is the record kept for everyone to detail their deeds, which means all nations have one single book in which everything and deeds of everyone are registered in it. The All-Merciful Creator will tell people that their book is before Him, and it testifies to whoever has been done by each and every human being. From these ayahs, we'll learn that, number one, the system of creation is based on truth and justice, and the minutest acts of every single person are recorded in detail. And number two, the reward or punishment on the day of judgment is based on deeds done during mortal life, whether good or evil. Now let us listen to ayahs 30 and 31 of this surah.
فَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ فَيُدْخِلُهُمْ رَبُّهُمْ فِي رَحْمَتِهِ ذَلِكَ هُوَ الْفَوْزُ الْمُبِينُ وَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَفَلَمْ تَكُنْ آيَاتِي تُتْلَى عَلَيْكُمْ فَاسْتَكْبَرْتُمْ وَكُنْتُمْ قَوْمًا مجرمين.
As for those who have faith and do righteous deeds, their Lord will admit them into His mercy. That is the manifest success. But as for the faithless, they will be asked, "Were not my signs recited to you? But you were disdainful, and you were a guilty lot." On the day of judgment, people will be divided into groups for receiving either reward or punishment. The true believers will be showered with divine mercy and grace. And this is indeed the manifest success, or fawzun mubin, as the Arabic phrase says. Of course, the firm faith of the true believers ought to be accompanied with righteous deeds to deserve the highest degrees of divine mercy and rewards. Although the all-merciful Lord forgives the faults and sins of those who had repented and reformed themselves before death. As for the faithless, that is the disbelievers who had denied the teachings of the prophets and refused to submit to the one and only creator of the universe by indulging in polytheism, idol worship, atheism, and even distortion of the message of the heavenly scriptures in order to follow their vain desires and mislead others. They will be deprived of divine mercy. Sins stem from disbelief and arrogance. Thus, Ayah 31, following the previous ayah's expression of the sublime station of the believers and the virtuous persons, reproaches the disbelievers. It means to say, were not divine ayahs recited to you for your guidance by the prophets, the imams, the saints, the scholars, and the righteous persons? The torment and punishment in which you are engulfed now is the result of your own evil, since you were disdainful of the words of guidance and ended up as the guilty lot. From these ayahs, we learn the following points. Number one, true belief and righteous deeds are inseparable and lead towards perpetual bliss and salvation. Number two, disbelief and sins originate from arrogance and self-conceit. And number three, the all-merciful Lord never wrongs anyone, and it is only the sinners and disbelievers who wrong themselves by indulging in evil despite the ample opportunities for repentance provided by God.
Debate.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Finally, Congress has certified the U.S. president-elect's Electoral College victory, ending the plethora of the outgoing president's lawsuits. Now, this hours after a pro-Trump supporters stormed the Capitol Wednesday, four people died, many more got injured, and nearly 70 others got arrested. President Trump now saying he's committed to an orderly transition of power. Tons of condemnations pouring in from big names around the world, including from former U.S. presidents and U.S.'s European allies. Iran's President Rouhani is also regarded as an indication of the vulnerability and failure of Western democracy. Now let's start the debate show. Let's first go to Washington, D.C. to our own correspondent there, Colin Campbell. Colin, tell us about some of those reactions and give us some more details regarding.
We have four sitting U.S. presidents who have condemned what happened on Capitol Hill on Wednesday afternoon when you had rioters and looters maraud through the halls of Congress. You had President Barack Obama making probably in the sharpest terms, talking about how the current president, Donald Trump, incited some of that violence that occurred and resulted in the deaths of four people on Wednesday. And then, of course, you had the last sitting Republican president, George W. Bush, also condemning what happened and just said that what occurred was more reminiscent of a banana republic and not a democratic republic like we like to consider the United States. At the same time, we're receiving criticism from leaders all over the world, including those from France and the UK, like Boris Johnson, saying that there should be a more peaceful transfer of power. We have heard from the current president, Donald Trump, who did release a statement after the deaths yesterday of four people and dozens of injuries, saying that there would be a peaceful transfer of power on January 20th. Some people are saying that that should be taken with a grain of salt, considering the president does not always tell the truth and is not very straightforward, most times with several different things. So we're waiting to see, just days away, how this is all going to go, especially now that the votes from the Electoral College have been confirmed by the president's vice president, Michael Pence.
Okay, thank you for that. Dr. Colin Campbell in Washington, D.C. Now let me invite author and commentator David Swanson from Charlottesville, Virginia. Good to have you with us. First question for you is, let's talk about the factors culminating in what happened on Capitol Hill. Washington caused similar moves in other countries, let's say Venezuela and Serbia, for instance. Now it's experiencing it on home turf. Have the chickens come home to roost?
Yeah, that comment about banana republics, well, we know what causes coups in banana republics. This was that rare thing, a coup in a country without a U.S. embassy. Right. It was also that rare thing, an attack on the U.S. government without a war in response to it, because it was an attack by people from the U.S. Can you imagine if a group of Iranian tourists or Russian or Asian tourists from anywhere in Asia had attacked the U.S. Capitol? Human life on Earth might be gone by now. So there are different responses depending on the actors. And this, of course, ironically, was on the same day that President-elect Joe Biden named Victoria Nuland as a possible nominee for Undersecretary of State, a principal organizer of a coup in Ukraine, advocate of a coup in Russia, etc. So this was the result of Congress looking at a president who instigated hateful violence against immigrants, against blacks, against women, against media, against leftists for 4 years, and saying, well, we won't do anything because we're not immigrants, we're not blacks, we're not women. And now, finally, within hours, you have dozens and dozens of Congress members wanting impeachment, which others of us have been demanding for over 4 years. You also had a very biased response by the police on Capitol Hill. If those had been peace activists or leftists with peaceful posters and signs, the police would have attacked them, not waited until they got inside the building to break out the tear gas. I mean, this was like Iraq 03, where if you're attacking anything other than the Ministry of Oil in Baghdad, it's okay, go right ahead. So I think people are starting to see the bias in a supposedly fair and equal system.
Okay, let me, from Washington, D.C., invite former CIA counterterrorism officer John Carriaco. John, good to have you with us. Let me ask you about the storming of the Capitol Hill. What does it say about the underlying deficit of democracy in the United States?
Well, frankly, I think democracy in the United States is showing cracks. This is the danger of populism. We saw this danger not just yesterday, but over the last 4 years, where people are repeating the president's assertions, for example, that the media are the enemy of the people, that progressives, liberals, blacks, and other minorities don't have a place in American politics, that the right is oppressed and needs to take to the streets. This is 4 years of danger just building and building, and it finally culminated yesterday in what really was, in my view, a coup attempt, and at the very least, insurrection.
Right. David, we have this YouGov report, and it says 45% of Republicans and one in five voters have backed the attack on Capitol Hill. Is this not a sign of a big division?
It is a sign of a huge division, and there was a big crowd in Washington, D.C. on the side of this coup or insurrection beyond those who took part at the Capitol building. And this is an indication of the power of the media and the idiocy of the president-elect demanding that Trump be put on television. Putting Trump on television created this crisis. We need the media outlets like Twitter to ban Trump from speaking ever again. But this is a development that comes out of decades of division, of divisive policies, of the absence of universal benefits coming from the U.S. government, a divisive, racist society where there is inequality growing, suffering growing, declining quality of life to the point where the U.S. can't be compared to most wealthy countries, has to be compared to third world countries, and people are angry. And until those on the left deliver them something, there are people who are going to turn to the right.
Now, John, we also have Ted Cruz saying that 36% of Americans see eye to eye with President Trump when it comes to complaining about vote rigging. They say there has been some fraud. So what's this supposed to indicate in a country that's always boasting of human rights and democracy?
Right. There is literally no evidence whatsoever that there was voter fraud in any of the states, whether they were close in the presidential election or not. This speech that Ted Cruz gave on the floor of the Senate last night is going to be his legacy. The sad truth is that that 36% figure is likely correct, but there's always going to be a core of people who will believe Donald Trump no matter what he says. If he says the moon is made out of cheese, they'll believe that the moon is made out of cheese. And this is the danger of a president who keeps repeating a lie over and over and over again, because eventually a good solid core of Americans will believe that lie.
Mm-hmm. John, what do you think about the same?
That was John.
David.
Well, I think there is a chance that to a significant degree, Trump will fall out of favor, even among many Republicans, not because he's a lawless demagogue, not because he's a criminal bigot, but because he cost them the state of Georgia and the majority in the U.S. Senate. There will, as John rightly says, always be people who will never Trump. And this is a reason to immediately reconvene the Congress, impeach him, and remove him, or build the pressure to use the 25th Amendment or compel his resignation, because he will continue this. He will pardon those involved. He will run for office again if he's not barred from running for office again, which is a penalty that can be imposed through impeachment and conviction, even when someone is already out of office. And people to the liberal side of things will begin to see the military as the solution. I can't tell you how many people left of center yesterday were cheering for the National Guard, were cheering for the shooting of a woman in the U.S. Capitol, because they were on the Republican side rather than the Democratic side. So unless Congress acts and acts nonviolently through the rule of law, increasingly people on both sides of politics in the U.S. are going to see force and militarism as the solution. And this is a danger that extends beyond Trumpism.
Okay, John, let me now read part of a tweet by veteran U.S. diplomat Richard Haass. The tweet goes, "So much for the peaceful transfer of power. We already knew what we need to know about this president. The question is, how do we get to where so many Americans are so willing to throw democracy overboard?" Your take on that, please.
Richard Haass is one of the most experienced former diplomats that we have in think tanks. He's the head of the Council on Foreign Relations. And so he's seen presidents come and go. And like the rest of us, I think he's never seen a president like this one. What he's saying is exactly right. And what David said a moment ago is exactly right. We've had 4 years of this demagogue, out of control demagogue. We need to bring sanity back to our policy. And I'm not saying that Joe Biden necessarily is, you know, the perfect president-elect to bring sanity back. He's certainly a neoliberal and has supported wars all over the world. But I think so many Americans have come to the conclusion that anybody is better than Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. David, one basic question, and what caused all this to happen? I mean, pushing half Americans to vote for somebody like Trump, you know, with all of his personal attributes that you know better. Because this could stay and this could go on and it could still threaten the United States in different ways.
I think unless we get something dramatically better than what can be expected of Joe Biden left to his own devices, we will have a return of Trump or Trumpism in a different guise or something worse. I mean, until the left or the center in U.S. politics delivers people health care and retirement and job prospects and a peaceful, prosperous, sustainable society with a good outlook for their children, stops coming in last in handling disease pandemics, stops coming in first in brutal imprisonment and incarceration, stops coming in last in retirement and security and sense of well-being, then you're going to have people resorting to this sort of demagogue who promises them that the whole problem is some other group and what's needed is to bash them and at least it'll make you feel good even if you're still sick and hungry. And so it's not enough to get anybody other than Trump. Anybody other than Trump on its own is going to bring us back Trump. And unless Trump, as I said, is barred from running for office again, he himself is likely to run for office again.
Mm-hmm. And John, this Trumpism, this ideology is staying there. It's not only Trump, it could be manifested in somebody else. Let's see what the root causes have been.
Yeah, I think the root causes are angry white men really believe that they're being discriminated against. It's the craziest thing. They really believe that policies enacted over the last decades favor minorities. And they believe that Christianity is being squelched across the United States. To many observers, including me, it's so preposterous as to be laughable. But they really do believe this. And to pick up on a point that David made a moment ago, Trumpism without Donald Trump is alive and well. There is a possibility, a good possibility, that Donald Trump will run for president again. But we're already seeing people like Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who are emulating Donald Trump in their speeches now in order to appeal to his base of support so that when they run for president in 4 years, and I'm sure all three of them will, mm-hmm. they're going to sound just like Donald Trump.
Right. And David, basically, why should there be this bipartisan thing, you know, should be this domineering across the whole U.S. politics, no third party, you know, got any chance of, you know, getting any serious votes? What's wrong with this? Why the duopoly?
Well, I think that is a major part of the problem, especially in combination with even bigger parts of the problem, including the legalized system of bribery, of what are called bribes in other countries, but campaign contributions in the United States system, combined with the media problem. You have a corrupt, quasi-state corporate media system that shuts out alternatives. So it's not just the winner-take-all system, which, yes, could be reformed into a proportional or parliamentarian system, but it's that problem compounded many-fold by the financial corruption, by the media control, by the domination of the media and the ballots and the system by these two parties, not by the government, but by those two parties together. Mm-hmm. We need major reforms to the system if we're going to get something we could call representative, much less democratic.
Now, John, what do you think? Why shouldn't any independents or third parties have anything to say in the elections?
You know, I think we are in dire need of viable third parties. I have voted third party in the last two elections, and, the duopoly that we have, it just simply doesn't work anymore. We need a progressive party. Maybe non-Trump moderate Republicans need some sort of right-of-center party. And what we have now, the Greens and the Libertarians, are being officially oppressed in the respect that they're not allowed to automatically appear on ballots in all 50 states. They have a very difficult time raising money. They're not invited to debates, which means their ideas are never heard. That's got to change if there's going to be real movement on Capitol Hill, if there's going to be a real desire among the American people to try to clean up this system, it's clearly broken.
Now, David, Moscow has reacted to this Capitol incident. It blames what it calls the archaic electoral process in the U.S., which is not democratic. The question is, why shouldn't popular votes decide election results?
Well, historically, because the states want power as entities rather than just human beings. I think weighing the pros and cons, we would be better off with human beings having all of the power in this instance rather than the states. And there are a number of states and organizations and activists making huge progress in that direction, likely to succeed in the relatively near future, either by getting enough states to commit to honoring the national popular vote, whoever wins the most nationally wins, by enough states deciding on their own, as they are perfectly free to do and always have been, to distribute their electoral college votes proportionally, not giving them all to the single person who gets the majority or even just the plurality in that state. There are currently two states that do it that way. The other 48 are free to start doing it that way tomorrow. We just have to build enough public pressure in that direction.
All right. John, what do you think about that? Popular vote or electoral college?
I think popular vote is the only way that we can have real democracy. The electoral college is a holdover from the 18th century, and the 19th century. It was meant to ensure states' rights. It was meant to ensure the power and authority of landowners. It's antiquated. We really have to change it.
Well, David, can this be mended? I mean, this the system we're talking about, we're finding faults with it. What can be done about it?
Well, all kinds of things can be reformed. We can clean the money out. We can effectively or literally get rid of the Electoral College. We can create publicly funded media. We can support useful popular media. We can become better, wiser consumers and producers of media and communications. We can pressure Congress members and presidents and officials quite apart from elections. I mean, we've had success in already defeating a couple of the worst nominees for cabinet positions in the upcoming government without any elections playing any role in that whatsoever. But, you know, Biden, as of yesterday, has lost the Senate excuse. He was going to be able to say, I'm powerless to do anything good or change anything dramatically because of the Senate. That excuse is gone. So now, immediately, any big reforms that we want that we don't get, we can blame on the Democratic Party, which has complete power in the legislative and executive branches. So if we don't get decent wages and decent health care and an end to wars and a restoration of the Iran agreement and some movement on abolishing sanctions and a better approach on coronavirus and on, there's no big excuse available anymore.
Right.
So now's the time to make these demands.
Okay, John, we have 30 seconds for your final comments.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And we also really need public financing of presidential campaigns. The big corporations are the ones that control the political process, and the oligarchs in the United States. That has to change.
Okay. And on that note, we come to the end of this debate show. Let me thank our guests who joined us with our comments. We had former CIA counterterrorism officer John Kiriakou from Washington, D.C., and author and commentator David Swanson from Charlottesville, Virginia. See you next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn.